We'll learn about the changing of the guard at the ARRL in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. There's truly nothing more permanent than change. And so it was on April 18, 2016, the day Dave Sumner, K1ZZ, vacated the big chair at the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. Sumner served 30 years as league CEO. His successor is Florida ham Tom Gallagher, NY2RF. So just what kind of man is he? And what does he see in his crystal ball? We'll find the answers over the next 2 weeks, thanks to Eric Guth, 4U1UG, who spoke with Gallagher for an hour earlier this year on Eric's QSO Today podcast. Here's the first of two excerpts from that interview.
A single transcendental moment in the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. I was 12 years old. I walked into the central hall of the Franklin Institute where the Institute's ham radio station was located. It was top of the line, Collins S-line gear, the best in breed at the time. This would have been in the early 1960s. Encased in glass like a broadcast studio, and the ham radio operator who was running the station was talking to another ham in Ghana. And that ham was a cocoa farmer. And he was explaining to the Philadelphia station the effects of a way too successful cocoa crop that year and how it was depressing prices. I grew up in a little town outside of Philadelphia, didn't have the opportunity to learn much about places that were far away with strange sounding names. And that was very exciting to me. This guy was actually talking to somebody in Ghana. It was the beginning of an interest in economics, trying to understand why too much of a good thing was a bad thing. I was hooked from that moment.
At 12 years of age, did you start then on your novice career?
I did. It took me a couple of years to get going because I attended a boarding school outside of Philadelphia, which was fairly regimented, and there wasn't a lot of time for spare activities. It was a place that really abhorred inactivity. But over the next couple of years, I was able to get a tech license and get on the air, AM 6 meters, right in the path of a very good sunspot cycle, and meet a lot of people that had common interests with me and who helped me along the way.
Were there any Elmers or mentors that you remember who were responsible for helping you get that first license?
Yes, but even more, I think, influential were the Elmers that helped me after I got that first license. One of my career mentors was head of engineering at radio station WIP in Philadelphia, which was a very successful Metromedia outlet. As I asked him about the general license, he said, "Why don't you get your first phone license first? If you do that, it's not more difficult, really, than getting a general. You can come work for me in the summer as a relief engineer." And the prospect of working in broadcasting at Philadelphia's leading radio station for a 16-year-old was just too much to resist. So I got my first phone and I got my first real job that paid real money. And I worked 4 summers for Del Dengate, the chief engineer. And that was the launch of my career.
Was Del a ham radio operator?
He was actually not a ham radio operator. He was a graduate of Drexel University with a master's in electrical engineering. And he was extremely knowledgeable, almost erudite in his understanding of RF because he'd lived with it all of his life. But he was also a very good teacher. And there were plenty of guys on staff that worked for him who were hams. And he was accomplished at getting those colleagues to help young people. I think he cared a lot about young people. I imagine he launched more than one career from the job he had.
Do you remember your first call sign?
WA3GRF. I upgraded to N4GRF. I just like the Morse code rhythm of GRF. When I got my extra, I'm embarrassed to say many, many years later, I chose 2 of those letters for my extra license, sort of provide a little continuity.
Which is now the NY2RF.
Exactly.
What was your first rig?
It was a Hammerland receiver that my father managed to acquire second or third hand, and a 40-meter crystal-controlled transmitter built from spare TV parts, basically a design from the ARRL handbook. Back in the 60s, the handbook was full of stuff to build.
What's your current rig?
I've got a couple of them. Drake T4R4 combination with an L4B linear, which I don't use very often. I've restored that, sort of a therapy project. I have a ICOM 7600, which is just an amazing piece of equipment to somebody who grew up with tube equipment. I've got an 857 Yaesu and an 817 Yaesu, which is portable. And I probably operate more portable than I do from my shack.
And do you operate SOTA or any of the other islands on the air?
Anybody I can talk to. I got into this avocation because I really like to talk to people, particularly people that are far away and different than I am. So I'm an inveterate HF rag chewer. I'm also interested in building stuff. I'm a tinkerer in the old New England tradition, build it from what's at hand.
What kind of things do you build?
I like to build antennas, VHF antennas. Those are the things that are scalable that you can actually work on.
How did ham radio play a part in the choices that you made for your education and career?
Well, ham radio, if you follow my ham radio career out to work in the broadcasting industry, I worked for WGBH in Boston and then for the CBS television network after that. That paid for my education. And I'm deeply grateful to people like Dengate and some of the others who did encourage me along the way. But then I took a totally different path. I got an undergraduate liberal arts degree in English and then went on to the Wharton School to study finance for 2 years, and then spent 30 years on Wall Street as an investment banker.
Wow, that is a different path.
In some ways it is. If you remember that kid back in Philadelphia who wanted to talk to the world, I had the opportunity as an investment banker, you know, sort of a backstage pass around the world in the aerospace and defense industry. And so I did business in, I don't know, more than 60 countries at one time or another. And I have to say that the hours that I spent talking to people in Japan and Europe and South America really educated me on the differences between being an American and being anything else. And that was very useful. And I think also, as I got more and more involved in defense and more involved in the defense electronics business, because I was a ham, I could have at least a superficial conversation with an engineer and get about a micron deep into the technology. And I tell you, clients appreciate people who show an interest in what they do.
Did you take a ham radio on the road with you?
I did. I have an 817 that's probably got 2 million miles on it. It didn't always work at every opportunity I had to use it, and there were many opportunities where I could only listen, but it was a constant companion and a great deal of fun for listening to everything from HF and VHF to the local FM station.
Given your 2 million miles on the road, do you have any tips for listeners on how they might put an antenna in a hotel room?
Yes, get a piece of very fine insulated wire and drop it out the window.
And load it with a wire tuner.
If you can, yeah, but just get it out the window. And believe it or not, it works better than you think.
We're learning about Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, the new helm of the ARRL. We'll resume Eric Guth, 4Z1UG's conversation with Tom in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available 24/7 from therainreport.com, via Twitter at The Rain Report, and on iTunes. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
I want to come back to something that you asked earlier, which I thought was good, and that is working in a completely different field. I think one of the things that my career choice closed for me was the opportunity to work with people who work in a technical field, particularly RF. My world is, in some respects, still analog and still vacuum tube, and my greatest personal knowledge deficit is digital and network. And I'm struggling in the last 10 years since I retired from Wall Street to close that gap. And it's really hard. So if I were talking to a young ham today, I'd say, love all the stuff, love the history and the analog world, but learn the digital world because it's a whole lot harder to acquire later in life. I'm learning how digital signal processing works, which is the miracle of this generation of modern equipment. It's just extraordinary when you push filter 3 in a CW conversation and every other extraneous signal goes away, because you have an electronically fashioned 250 hertz channel. That took a lot of hardware many years ago, not even too many years ago. But recently I got involved with high-speed multimedia. About 2 or 3 years ago, some of the guys that I hang out with in Palm Beach were interested in building a network backbone up and down the coast of Palm Beach County, basically hacking Linksys 54GL router, which you know is just really a transceiver. And with some software and a good antenna and a solar battery or battery eliminator, you can create a mesh network repeater. And that just absolutely blew me away. I just thought that that was in the best tradition of amateur radio, which is find something and repurpose it. And so a bunch of us started putting up repeaters, and we didn't do much except exchange links and pass data back and forth. But one day we got the notion that we wanted to find out how far an 83 milliwatt signal would go. So we went down to the bottom of Lake Okeechobee, which is, I think, the largest body of water in the South, and we shot a signal all the way up the side of the lake to Port Mallorca, which I think was 17 miles away over water. And as we aligned the antennas and connected up the links, and the link quality moved up to 80, which is, if you're familiar with high-speed multimedia, is a very good signal connection. I saw 10 guys ranging from 16 to 60 jumping up and down and yelling, "Holy smokes, this is pretty exciting."
Are you running the HamNet mesh network software from Austin?
Yes, from Austin. That's the stuff I use. And I have one down in Florida. And I also have a home in Manhattan. And I have one which I've told my building superintendent is a work of art, but it isn't, up on the roof.
It's a sculpture.
Yes, thank you.
That's why I tell my neighbors about the antennas on the back of the house.
Well, art is what the beholder beholds.
A little bit more about the mesh network, because I had it here as a question to ask you. Is your network actually pretty solid, and you've got a large number of users in the Miami area?
In Palm Beach County, that's 70 miles north of Miami. And the significance of that, Eric, is that the construction, building heights, and vegetation are a lot different than Miami. It'd be tough to do in Miami. There's so many big buildings, but Palm Beach is largely a county of 1 and 2 story homes. If you get the stick up high enough in the air, it works better than you think. To answer your question, we have a number of participants who come in and go out. I'm not sure the network is as robust and resilient as HSMM can be, but it's not a bad start. And then we're also using it at various events. We had a bike-a-thon for kids in one of the parks, first opportunity to kids to be away from their parents and show a little independence biking around the paths. We set up slow scan TV so mom and dad could keep an eye on them.
What kind of impact does amateur radio have on your family life?
My children never were interested in it. I have 3 sons. They are 29, 26, and 22. The youngest one is very scientifically oriented. He's a math jock. And the other two, one is a private equity guy and the other is an entrepreneur. I will tell you that ham radio was just a pain in the neck for the boys growing up, because if we would move houses or something like that, the first thing that went up was the antenna. And the first bodies recruited were the three of them. And they were very patient about it, although as they grow up and become adults, I'm the butt of their humor. My oldest son spent 4 years in the Marine Corps as a combat officer in Afghanistan. There was a time when he got into a little bit of trouble with one of his squads out in dangerous country. The sat phones stopped working. They always do when you need them. So they called in the cavalry with 30 megahertz. I have a photograph of a top of a building in a village in Afghanistan. 4 chairs are piled up and sandbagged. There's a mop that's duct taped to the top chair, and there's a dipole hanging off either side of it. My oldest son, the captain, was reported to say, "My old man says get it up as long and high as possible."
Perhaps that being recruited to be the guy to put up the antenna as a kid left him with some skills to save his life.
Skills that he didn't know about, and skills that were very helpful to him and his Marines. So you never know when you're going to use it later on.
That's an amazing story. The biggest challenge that most of the QSO Today listeners report back to me is that they have little time for amateur radio. How do you overcome this time management challenge?
I learned a long time ago that if you want something done, ask a busy person, because they're by nature, training, or experience, skillful at getting a lot of things done in a short amount of time. I will also tell you perfectly frankly that there were years in my life when I didn't have a lot of time for ham radio. When my kids were young and they needed my attention, and I worked a long week and traveled a lot, so there wasn't a lot of spare time to go around, my ham radio suffered. But it came back even more robustly than at first after my kids got out of the house, went away to school, went to college. If you can successfully integrate amateur radio into the ordinary things that you do, it's a whole lot easier. Do you have an HT in the car? That's a good thing to have in the car, particularly if you drive around locally. There's a lot of folks you have much in common with you can talk to. Would like to see HF more prominently on the mobile. Probably not when you're driving, but if you pull over by a beach and crank up the screwdriver antenna, you can have a nice conversation with Europe in the early afternoon. Trying to integrate the hobby, not only the practice and the operation, but the study and the overall experience into your life is easier than you think. My club down in Florida, West Palm Beach Amateur Radio Group, we have breakfast every Sunday. We don't talk about transmitter design every Sunday, but it's a group of people that know each other and just preserve the social niceties of having breakfast at 9 o'clock.
What advice would you give to new or returning hams?
I would divide them into two groups. To new hams, I would say, welcome to this wonderful activity. You have so much to contribute. You don't even know how much you have to contribute. So go educate your elders. To the returning hams, I would say, if you've been out of the loop for a decade or more, you got a lot of homework to catch up on. Read, experience firsthand, and reach out beyond your comfort zone. Read. There's an awful lot of good information, knowledge, and know-how in, well, the ARRL library. It's an extraordinary library of technical and operating know-how that's always fresh and readily available. But there are also other publications. There are other things to read. I enjoy reading the publications of other countries' amateur radio associations. And you can read them on the web. You don't have to have an expensive subscription. The second thing, spend time in your clubs or your organizations in the learning part and be the proactive person. Do you remember high school and shop and somebody had a 1968 Ford Mustang that had a carburetor problem? You push it in the garage and there's five guys and gals under the hood working on it. If you're a returning ham, you be the guy who's leading that, because people are waiting to follow you. And if 20 years of seniority, people are going to follow you.
And that concludes the first of two excerpts from an interview conducted earlier this year of the new ARRL CEO, Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, for QSO Today, Eric's weekly ham radio podcast. We'll bring you our second excerpt from this one-hour conversation next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2016 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for Rain's founder, producer, and ace editor, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from The Rain Report. Available from therainreport.com, at The Rain Report on Twitter again, and via iTunes.